Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, just know that none of this is normal. None of it. And also remember, some of our greatest lessons will be a result of our biggest failures, our greatest pains, and our greatest struggles. So learn from that. Welcome to the Rob O'Donnell Show on this Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025, on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. 308-73 and just outstanding outside. Make sure you get some outside. This is the kind of day you need to say enough's enough. You know, I was walking through the office here and we had the receptionist up front and I was like, forward those calls and get out of here a little early. But she had to go sit on a student pickup line, so it was with no rush to leave. But it's that kind of day outside. So get outside and enjoy it. Go for your walk. Get some fresh air. Get some vitamin D. It's going to be a beautiful evening tonight. If you follow me on social media, I posted a picture of just after sunset up at my house. The sky was a great orange and red and yellow. And just one of those nights you just look and be thankful. Thankful you're breathing again. Thankful you're here. Thankful where I live. Thankful you know, I get to share that with you guys each and every day, weekdays from 3 to 6. So lots of things we have on the discussion board today. I did see, before we get into the gist of things, did get a report last night. And I did see a little glow, but it must not have been too big of a fire, of a brush fire up near us in Scott Township last night. I think it was relatively small because I didn't see it much more after the first reports of it. I did see a little glow from my viewpoint of my mountain that looks over in that direction. But, man, there's some doozies, and we're going to talk about them in a little bit later on in the show. But 12,000 acres out of control, only 30% contained in New Jersey, evacuations. It's an all-hands-on-deck for first responders out there. So our thoughts and prayers go to them in dealing with this. Thankfully, as of earlier today, there were no structures involved, but it was right on that cusp. It was right on the line of those homes and some businesses and leaning up against a decommissioned nuclear plant. So, and again, no worry there. It's just the vacant structures. Everything's been decommissioned and moved. But concerning nonetheless. You never know with those kind of places if they told us the truth from the start. So we're going to talk about that a little later in the show. And here, a little locally, closer to home, there was the Scranton mayoral debate between the Democrats and the Republicans last night. The story just came out a little while ago. I was seeing some information, some pictures earlier today. One of the odd things that was pointed out was the two Republican candidates sat at one long table together. And when it was time for the Democrat candidates, which is includes the current mayor of Scranton, those tables were separated apart and they did not sit together. And some people just said it was odd that there was a change made for that. And I wasn't there, so I don't know who went first. I don't know what the situation was, but just odd. Usually when those places are set up, they're set up and that's the end of it. But it was one of the things that I would love to be asked, and no one seems to ask it or want to ask it, is if you, and this is to all four candidates, the two Republicans, the two Democrats, one being the incumbent, and I believe there's two independents that have announced they're running. It's a simple question. If you are elected as mayor of Scranton, do you commit to serving your full term? It seems like a pretty easy and honest question. But no one seems to want to ask it because there's a lot of rumors around of other offices and other, you know, horizons for some people. It's a simple question. And I think the people of Scranton, donors, supporters, deserve an honest answer. It's very simple. If you are elected to as a term for mayor of Scranton, do you commit to serving your full term? Now, obviously, we've seen people on all spectrums decide otherwise. But I think the question needs to be asked. And if within, let's say, months, or let's say less than a year, there's a run for something else, well, you know what? You weren't completely honest. But it's interesting that this debate at one of our colleges in the area, political science, departments. Don't ask the question that if simple question. If you were elected to a term as mayor, do you plan on seeing that through? Looking at some text messages coming in already. I guess there was a Scranton City Council meeting last night. I did not get a chance to see that yet. Usually I watch it today, but there was a lot of things going on today. Quite honestly, the beautiful weather. So did not watch it today. So I got to catch up on that. So one of the other stories, and this is already burning some on both sides. And not really, it's I shouldn't say both sides. It's been discussed on why would you phrase it in such a way? So the Democrat Pennsylvania governor, Josh Shapiro, revealed yesterday that President Trump called him over the weekend to ask how his family was doing after the arson attack on the governor's residence earlier this month. He said, "I appreciated that the president called me," Shapiro told reporters at the annual Easter egg hunt in Harrisburg, the first public event held at the governor's mansion since the April 13th blaze, destroying the historic owned building dining room. "I actually didn't take his call because it came from his cell phone, and I didn't have that number in my phone, so I didn't know who it was," the governor said. "As soon as I heard the message, I called him right back." Pretty cool that the president of the United States uses his own cell phone, has caller ID to where you can call it right back and get him. That's pretty good. Shapiro said he spoke with Trump for more than 15 minutes. The two discussed several topics, including the arson attack that forced the governor, his family, guest, and pets to rush out of the building in the wee hours of the morning. We've been talking about this. The governor said he was very gracious, Shapiro said of Trump, noting that the president asked about his wife, Lori, and his four children, who had all been asleep when Molotov cocktails were tossed into the building, lighting a huge blaze. He asked how Lori and the kids were doing. "We talked for a couple of minutes about what transpired at the residence. And then we talked about, for maybe the next 15 minutes or so, about a whole host of other topics," Shapiro said. The governor refused to go into details about the other topics that were discussed. "Obviously, I'm not going to get into our private conversation," he said, "but his attuned to the issues that are important to me. I, of course, know the issues that are important to him, and we agreed to stay in touch going forward." It's a good, respectful dialogue back and forth. Glad it happened. Glad the governor and the president both took the high road on this. And it's amazing that some on social media mostly, supporters of Shapiro, saying, you know, why would you even call him back? Why would you take his call? Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? So it's ridiculous. And it's good on the governor's part to say, "Hey, we had a private conversation," and that's the way it stays. I'm sure the governor, who was not shy to voice his opinion, said some things that he wanted to say as far as things that were important to him, his party in Pennsylvania. And that's the way it's supposed to go. When you have an open dialogue, honest, respectful dialogue, you discuss different topics. You discuss things you don't agree with. And you keep it between yourselves. And that's admirable. And I respect Governor Josh Shapiro for his stance on this. And he was pushed to kind of reveal a little more, and he didn't. Now, Cody Bomber, who's now being classified as the alleged anti-Semitic madman accused of scaling the fence, smashing a window with a hammer, and hurling Molotov cocktail into the governor's residence as Shapiro and his family slept, has been charged with arson, attempted murder, terrorism, and other offenses. The information that's coming out now that his mother tried to have him what's called 302'd, involuntarily committed, by police and failed at doing that. That is going to play a role in this case moving forward. And if in fact this can be proven, and if in fact there is record of this, and it's come up several times, so I have no reason to believe it's not true, But, you know, that'll have to be shown as evidence in a court if they're going to use it as any sort of affirmative defense as his mental state. But if his mother can prove, and his lawyer, through his mother and testimony, can prove that she did in fact reach out to law enforcement, she did try to have him committed under a 302, which is a involuntary mental hold, where they take you against your will and have you evaluated by psychiatrists to see if you're competent to be out in public, if you're safe to be out in public. And if not, now that's a both legal and medical proceeding that needs to take place there. If that is true, this could very well navigate where this goes as far as charges happen. And it should. It appears that this was before this event, and if there is a history of mental illness, if there's a history of this person being on medication like his family said he was and he stopped taking, then he should be treated in a certain manner. Not get off, not given be given a pass. I mean, he risked the governor's and his family's life. That needs some sort of repercussions. But if this can be shown in court that this history is there, and just day or two prior, his family was trying to get him mental health and have him committed against his whim, it will work as an affirmative defense in not justifying, but giving reason to how and why he did the things he did. You know, as far as his ramblings and his actions after the fact, to where he attempted to turn himself in multiple times, it appears, called the state police once or twice, and didn't get a response fast enough, so he walked a mile or two to the state police headquarters and turned himself in. And that's when he was taken into custody. Now, it was an ongoing investigation. I'm sure they were still trying to figure out who was who, and if this person was even involved, or just some sort of whack job calling to say he was involved. But all this will come out as it moves forward. But it's interesting, this day and age where we have this partisan vitriol against each other, to where you have a president, if you agree with him or not, call a governor, if you agree with him or not politically, like either one or don't like either one, but was obviously put through a very traumatic instance, especially when your family, your children, your home is involved. I don't know anybody who's ever had a crime committed on their home, even on their vehicle. And when I lived on Long Island, I had my car broken into in my driveway, and that truly felt like a violation. And that was nothing more than, you know, smashing the window and getting in my car and really not getting anything. But the fact that it happened in my driveway, feet from my door, with my family inside, it was not very comforting. Now, thankfully, less than a week, we were able to catch the person because we were able to track some of the things he did take, his use of them. One of them being my work cell phone, to where he hit some cell towers and we were able to get a location on him. But it's still, if your house has ever been broken into, it's a different level of crime, and it truly gets to a lot of people, if not anyone, everyone. So the fact that all this went on and people are questioning, well, why would you take a call from him, or why would you even call that governor? You know, why not? Why not? Their political differences have nothing to do with someone throwing Molotov cocktails in your dining room while your family's sleeping, you know, a few doors away. That transcends any political view, and it should always transcend any political view. So I applaud both the president and the governor on this conversation, and how they both reacted to the conversation and kept it between them. And to all the naysayers who think this is a good or bad thing, I just don't get it. And I think we need to find a little more humanity when it comes to especially things like this, that politics isn't everything. Matter of fact, it's very little in life. It's just seemed to be put at the forefront now because of, you know, the times we're in, I guess. It's 3:23 here at WILK. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So these idiot Democrat politicians who were going down to El Salvador to try to bring this Maryland dad home from El Salvador, it's really falling flat on its face, and it gets worse as the days go on. Now, it's interesting because just yesterday, Politico's headline was, "Dems see a winning issue in case of man mistakenly deported to El Salvador." And today, less than 24 hours later, The Hill, same picture. The headline is, "Democrats wonder if Kilmar Abrego Garcia's case is a political fight worth having." So even the mainstream media that protects and guides them is starting to lean the other way, saying maybe this isn't the fight worth having. Just maybe. Well, it comes out today that the man who Kilmar Abrego Garcia identified as his boss during the 2022 traffic stop, remember the one where he was with eight other individuals, said that he was bringing them to Maryland to work? Well, the man who he identified as his boss during that traffic stop previously pled guilty to trafficking illegal aliens. Now, remember, he was suspected of trafficking those individuals. And the Tennessee State Patrol, based on the FBI and ICE at the time under the Biden administration, said, no, just write him a ticket and we're not going to do anything with them. Jose Ramon Hernandez Reyes owned the car Abrego Garcia was using to shuttle eight illegals from Texas to Maryland for construction work, quotes. Reyes has since been deported after serving time in prison for a separate smuggling case. So the guy who owned the truck, the van that he was driving, and who he defined as his boss, is a known immigrant smuggler. So I would say the Tennessee State Patrol was dead on when they said, we assume that he was smuggling. And another ball dropped by the past administration, letting this individual wander around. So as these things start, there's four members of Congress there right now. One of them said they're not coming home until he's going to be free. So that's going to be interesting. But it just keeps getting worse. They tried to make this innocent dad who has a kid and, you know, he's on the straight and narrow and we don't know if he was a gang member. Well, then it comes out that, yeah, it's been proven in court twice that he's a gang member. Not only that, he has MS-13 tattooed on his hand, plus other tattoos. Plus, we have confidential informants who are in the gang with him that say he's a high-ranking member of the gang. His basis for his hearing the first time, where they stated that he could not go back to El Salvador, but he could be deported, was the fact that he was an MS-13 gang member and Batallo 18, the rival gang, would try and kill him if he went back. So his own advocate, attorney, whatever he had for that hearing, said he was a gang member. That was the whole reason he couldn't go back to El Salvador. And then it comes out that he's a domestic abuser, where his wife takes out a PFA, a temporary, then permanent, and writes this lengthy, detailed report on how he beats her. He's made her bleed. She has pictures. She has video of her injuries. She's afraid for her life. He's abused their child. That's all in the handwritten statement and signed by her. Then that comes out, and now it turns out that he was just suspected of trafficking. That's unfounded. There's no information of that now. Well, now it turns out that the man who he said was his boss, who owned the van he was driving, is a known smuggler, and he's in the car with eight illegal immigrants, bringing them from Texas to Maryland. I mean, it doesn't take rocket science here, people. It doesn't take rocket science to show how inept and how purposeful negligent the Biden administration was letting individuals like this not only flourish across our border in the numbers of millions, but travel freely, get released freely, redefine asylum so they can attempt to keep them here even longer, overflood the system. And now they want to say, well, you're not doing proper due process. Well, where was the due process when they came in? Where was the proper vetting and checking when they came in before they let them go and run across all the nation? Before we had to spend billions of dollars in taxpayer dollars that could be doing other things, lowering our tax burdens, paying for the social services that we need. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the thing, you know, the thing they're complaining that the Republicans are trying to take away without any evidence or proof. But not a peep about the billions they've spent on a manufactured crisis that they have not only created, were complicit in, but manufactured. You can't make it up. You just can't. It's 3:32 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. We were talking at the start of the show how they had the debate for the mayor of Scranton, both the Democrats, two individuals, including the incumbent mayor, and two Republicans that were also debated at different times, not against each other. The Democrats debated against one another, and the Republicans debated against one another because it's just the primary coming up in May, obviously. One of the things brought up as an accomplishment and the biggest focus was the financial fiduciary duty of a mayor for a city like Scranton. And that was the current mayor's primary focus, talking about, you know, touting Scranton's achievements over her first term as that. But it would never came up and was never brought to light during that debate that she had 50% of the total Scranton budget given to her in ARPA funds for two of the 4 years that she was there. Now, it was split up. It was between 2 years, but $68 million. If you're getting 50% of your total annual budget infused into your term as a mayor, if you're not going to be more financially secure, if you're not going to improve your credit ratings, if you're not going to do better with bond visuals, there is something dramatically wrong. So there is that caveat there. Yes, things are better in Scranton, a lot better than Lackawanna County, no doubt. I will definitely give them the credit for that. But you have to realize that in that four-year term, you were given an eighth of the total funding of that 4 years in a lump sum in ARPA funds. And one of the things that were celebrated yesterday was the removal or the cutting of the ribbon and the completion of the renovations of the City Hall building. And it's a great thing. It is an iconic building. Every time I drive by it, it's something to look at. One of the things, just walking around City Hall, down to Courthouse Square, down by Hotel German even, and you know, places like that. It just goes to show that the architecture here in Scranton, in Northeast Pennsylvania, because Wilkes-Barre has their own icons and gems as well, how beautiful and how historic they truly are. But one of the things that caught me during this, now it cost $4.8 million, and speaking of the ARPA funds, $1.5 million was paid through a redevelopment assistance capital grant and a portion of the city's American Rescue Plan app, ARPA funds, help cover that $4.8 million. And that's where I'm saying it's a lot easier to do things when the administration is buying votes and flooding money in that helped cause the inflation, no doubt, but did prop up cities to do better. And that was the whole reasoning behind it. And ARPA funds were based off of not who you knew. So it's not because there was a surrogate, Paige Cognetti, as a mayor of Scranton, and we had Cartwright and we had Casey here, and Joe Biden was in the White House. ARPA funds were divided, once the law passed, were divided based on your city's population. Like I said, Corpus Christi, Texas, which is a Republican town, has about the same population as the city of Scranton, and they got the same amount of ARPA funds. So it wasn't because of, you know, Joe Biden was helping us out because he's from Scranton and, you know, he works well with us here. No. Once the law was passed, they had nothing to do with who got what amount of money. That was based on the percentages in the law and population. But one of the things in this article that I found funny is a surprise for – this is a quote from the story in the Times Tribune today. A surprise to residents, the city lit up the iconic building tower on St. Patrick's Day, making it the first time the tower was lit up in four decades. Great thing. It's good to see. Hopefully they continue to do that. It says, Cognetti said crews installed the floodlights to shine green March 7th, but didn't announce their plan to light the tower up for the special holiday. So many things had to go right to be able to light that tower green, she said. And it's a wonder why they have problems with the Christmas lights in Naog Park. So many things had to go right to be able to light that tower green. Was it that difficult? Was there hurdles to jump to make it happen? Maybe there's more to it, but I guess the lay people like you or me don't see how so many things had to go right to be able to light the inside of the tower green. It's lights. It's a switch. It's the will and the order to do it. Problem solved. It's 3:43 here at WILK. We'll be back. That's it. It's Wednesday, hump day. Week's half over. We can do this. You got it covered. Just listen to me every day. We'll guide you through it here on Rob O'Donnell Show, WILK News Radio. Can't be that bad. Listen, I'm looking at the polls now on TV where they say Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, representative from New York, she would have been my congresswoman if I still lived in the home I was born and raised in and lived for 27 years. Ugh, imagine that. But her approval rating's skyrocketing nationwide, and she's playing the game right. She's staying out of the true limelight with these deportations and these criminally illegal aliens. She's focusing on the Bernie Sanders oligarchy. It's an oligarchy all of a sudden for the past 35 years. I say the Democrats need to give her a leadership position in Congress. There is no other way around it. They need to give her a leadership position. Will she be a threat to Chuck Schumer? Maybe. I think the writing's on the wall for him. I think he sees it. I thought for sure that she would challenge Gillibrand. But I don't think she had the rest of the state platform, and it's still going to be hard for her, but I think she beats Chuck Schumer. Does she do that and then make a play for the White House? I don't know. But I think at a minimum, Democrats need to give her a leadership position. They need to elevate her. If she's polling that much and the American people and the Democrats across America are saying, this is who we have faith in. This is who we want to see more of. I say they need to give it to her, right? That's the way democracy works. That's the way your party is supposed to be. So are you calling your Democrat representatives? Are you calling the leadership of the Democrat Party and saying, you need to elevate Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez for nothing more than you need to hear more from her. You need to see how she is on leadership platforms. Is she going to be the real deal in 2028, or is she what a lot of people think she is? So as Democrats, I think you need to demand that she be elevated in the Democrat Party, be given a leadership position in Congress, start to make decisions, start to lead groups in Congress rather than just, you know, a simple committee member or just a one of 400 and whatever. But we'll see if that happens or not. Or do they try and push her by the wayside, which Nancy Pelosi did many times because it's been a known ongoing dispute that was cordial because they never truly wanted to take each other on head on, and that goes for both of them. But Nancy Pelosi did run with an iron fist. Hakeem Jeffries doesn't have the sense to run anything in any well-mannered way. So does he promote her to leadership? We'll see. Be interesting what happens there. I'm going to leave this story to after the Bloomberg because I think it's funny how they're blaming bad ice under the Trump administration for getting an office that was planned last year. Time for the Bloomberg. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. I'm going to try and squeeze two stories in here because, like I said, there's lots to talk about. So the Luzerne County Flood Protection Authority voted Tuesday to approve a renovation contract that will let the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement occupy space in the authority's office complex. A group of citizens asked the authority to reconsider leasing the building space to ICE at the Tuesday meeting, citing Trump administration deportation policies. ICE will not use the office complex in 44 for overnight detention. The building will not have a holding cell, said the board. It's mainly an office for them to do their paperwork and to turn in and out of. So you had the Democratic Socialists of Pennsylvania there. You had a couple of different groups there protesting this. And again, it was the mean Trump ICE and deportations. The thing is that this lease was initiated in October of 2024. October of 2024. Even before the election. Even before it was known who was going to win. They're going to lease almost 2,000 square feet of space to ICE for almost $29,000 in total rent for the first year. So it's a business decision. It's not a political or anything else. Who else is going to rent that facility for $29,000 a year? With I believe there's a 3% increase built in annually as it moves forward. But again, this was initiated by the prior administration. But now, because it's the Trump administration's ICE, no one had a problem with it when it was initiated under the last administration because ICE wasn't allowed to do their job. You would have to wonder why ICE would want an office here in October of 2024 before they even knew who was going to win, because ICE does what they can do under the guidelines and support provided to them by the administration. Now, we've seen how the past administration just utterly lied to America about what could and couldn't be done. The border has been secured in less than 3 months. I saw some numbers today, and it's crossings are down like 300,000 to under 11,000. That was inconceivable under the last administration. So were they that incompetent or just lying? It's one or the other. It is one or the other. One of the other things going on is there's a big question from morticians in the area, from funeral directors, about who the next coroner is going to be for Luzerne County. And there's a lot of questions here. The individual who was hired as coroner was arrested for slashing tires when he was a Pittston City police officer and fired from that position due to such. He said he had a substance use disorder problem that has been rectified. He completed a 30-day inpatient treatment program, which I applaud him for, and also nearly 3-week post-treatment program is nearing 5-year sobriety anniversary. That's a great thing. That needs to be celebrated. But that does not negate the fact that he had a prior criminal record and was fired as a police officer for such. It goes into that he's taking classes at Luzerne County Community College for mortuary science. He's been employed at a funeral home in West Pittston for 18 years and president for the last 5 years. But funeral directors have raised concerns that in the past about employing a head coroner linked to any funeral home due to potential conflicts of interest. County ethic codes prohibits coroners while engaging in county business from soliciting, discussing, or accepting business for funeral homes which he or she is associated with. Now, this is speculative. They're not saying he's doing this. They're saying there's the potential for that. Regardless of past negative personnel actions and other published reports, Fernandez said that he was open, that he had problems in his past stemming from his substance abuse. Crocomo said Fernandez brings a wealth of experience in police investigations and compassionate approach to serving the community during times of loss. If you're in Luzerne County, are you comfortable with a county coroner that has a criminal record? And I'm not going to hold his substance abuse as long as he's clean and can prove that. I don't know if Luzerne County has drug tests, but I'll take it on its face value. I think it's a great thing that he cleaned himself up, but it still does not negate the fact that he's had legal troubles that cost him his law enforcement job. So how do you feel, Luzerne County? It's not my county, but I just found this story odd. And I guess other funeral directors did, which is why they're bringing up the issue with the county manager. 4 o'clock here at WILK.